from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. This week, we're featuring some of our most entertaining interviews of the year. Today, one of rock's great poets and eccentrics, Tom Waits. This year, he released a new album showing off his famous gravelly voice.
I bark my voice out through a closed throat, pretty much. It is more, perhaps, like a dog in some ways.
Also, late-night host Jimmy Fallon talks about some of his hilarious impressions. Once at a dinner, he warned Donald Trump that he was going to do an impression of him on SNL so that Trump wouldn't be caught off guard.
And I go, hey, Mr. Trump, I do an impression of you tonight on the show. And he goes, oh, you do great impressions. I go, yeah, but I'm doing you tonight on the show. I just want to let you know. And he turns around to his whole table and he goes, Jimmy Fallon's doing an impression of me tonight.
That's coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week, we're featuring some of our most entertaining interviews of the year. Tom Waits was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year and released a new album called Bad as Me. We were happy to have him back on the show to talk about it. As John Pareles recently wrote in the New York Times, quote, at 61, Waits is acclaimed as an American marvel, a songwriter who can be smart and primal, raucous and meticulous, ethereal and earthy, bleak and comical. He has sung about drunks, tramps, carnies, and killers, but also has shown a vulnerable side in tender, unironic love songs. When he emerged in the 1970s, he had clearly studied beat writers, jazz pioneers, and Delta bluesmen. Now indie rockers study him, unquote. Waits' album Bad as Me features guitarists Mark Rebo, David Hidalgo, and Keith Richards, who also sings on one track. Let's start with the opening song, Chicago, which was co-written by Kathleen Brennan, who has been Waits' songwriting partner and wife since 1980.
The seeds are planted here, but they won't grow. We won't have to say goodbye if we all go. Maybe things will be better in Chicago. Leave all we've ever known for a place we've never seen. Maybe things will be better in Chicago. Well, it's brave for us to stay, even braver to go. Wherever she goes, I go. Maybe things will be better in Chicago. All we want, we carry with us. You know where I can be found, where the rainbow is the ground. I'm not alone, I'm not afraid, 'cause this bird is gone from its cage. There's so much magic we know on this sapphire we call home. With my coat and my hat,
Tom Waits, welcome back to Fresh Air. I love the new album.
Oh, thanks.
So the first track that we heard from your new album, Bad as Me, is kind of raucous sounding.
Yeah.
But I think some of the really great tracks on the album are ballads.
Yeah.
And there's really some wonderful songs, and I want to play an example of that.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and this is a song called Kiss Me. And honestly, the opening, I don't know if you intended this or not. I assume you did, but the opening sounds so much like Julie London's Cry Me a River, like the opening chords that Barney Kessel plays on guitar.
Oh, right, yeah. I love Julie London. And we put some of the sound of vinyl, pops and clicks of vinyl on there to try and go back in time a little bit. Actually, it's not pops and clicks. That was barbecued chicken, actually.
Really, it has that kind of sizzle of like the surface
noise. It
sounds
exactly like vinyl, you know, if you hold a microphone up to your barbecue, yeah, it's the same sound, actually. But yeah, I'm a big fan of those records. Yeah.
Well, let's hear it. This is Kiss Me from Tom Waits' new album, Bad as Me.
Fire's dying out, all the embers have been spent. Outside on the street, lovers hide in the shadows. You look at me, I look at a stranger once again. Kiss me like a stranger.
So that's Tom Waits from his new album, Bad as Me. And the song is called Kiss Me. So if Kiss Me was inspired by Julie London, and I assume by other Torch singers like, say, Peggy Lee.
Oh, right. Peggy Lee, yeah, sure.
When did you start listening to singers like that, and what do they mean to you? I mean, you listen to so many different kinds of music.
In high school, I guess. I was always a big fan of melody, and that's where I looked. I liked Barbara Streisand, and I liked Peggy Lee, and of course, Billie Holiday and Bessie Smith. But as far as of course, Julie London, I love those old songs. And I guess for a songwriter, you don't really go to songwriting school. You learn by listening to tunes, and you try to understand them and take them apart and see what they're made of. And I wonder if you can make one, too. And you just do it by picking up the needle and putting it back down and figuring out how these people did this magical thing. This is like, it's rather mystifying when you think about songs, where they come from and how they're born.
So can you remember any specific songs that you deconstructed like that, songs by Torch singers?
Oh, well, Cry Me a River was definitely one that I listened to a lot. Mm-hmm. I remember listening to James Brown a lot, and listening to It's a Man's World, wondering how he came up with that. Ray Charles. I remember he had a recording that he did with Cleo Lane. It was all the songs from Porgy and Bess. And he did Bess, You Are My Woman Now. It was like, wow. And he used a high falsetto in a lot of the songs. And I used to listen to that with great attention paid to the anatomy of the songs, and not only Ray's magic, but what these songs were built out of. So, yeah, it's something it's ongoing. You still are mystified by the construction of songs, and you don't ever really get to a plateau where you feel like, oh, well, I'm done. I know how to do this. You stay rather curious and puzzled by the whole affair, really.
Did you ever take singing lessons, like, later in life, thinking, you know, the more styles of singing you wanted to do and the more voices you were comfortable using, that you wanted to just, like, learn more about how the voice works and how you could, how you could get the most out of yours?
Out of my voice. Do you think that I should be taking voice lessons, Terry?
I think voice lessons are fascinating. I mean, I think like the human voice is such an amazing instrument. Like, the more you understand it, the more amazing it becomes.
Well, I have been to voice doctors, throat doctors on the road periodically. I'll go in and have them tune me up. And then I have exercises I have to do before a show, and I sound very peculiar on the other side of the door. I bark my voice out through a closed throat, pretty much. It is more, perhaps, like a dog in some ways.
But that's murder on the voice, isn't it?
I hope it's not murder, but it is. It does have its limitations, but I'm learning different ways to keep it alive. And it is hard on especially on the road when you're doing night after night after night. Yeah.
So what do the exercises sound like that you do?
Things like that.
Sounds great. And that, like, loosens up your throat?
Yeah, it just relaxes the muscles and all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That wasn't bad, was it?
No, that actually sounded great. It sounded.
Yeah, I thought so, too. Yeah.
Well, if you're just joining us, my guest is Tom Waits, and he has a new album that's called Bad As Me. Why don't we hear another song? No, this time we could play Back in the Crowd, which is a very, like, Mexican-flavored ballad. And it opens almost like Spanish Harlem, song.
Well, that is called Spanish Tinge, that genre of music, this tempo, this beat. It does have a lot in common with Spanish Harlem and a myriad of other songs. Of course, it's missing the castanets. That was fun to do.
I remember you saying that when you were growing up, your father you grew up near the Mexican border, and your father listened to exclusively Mexican radio stations where they spoke in Spanish, and you got introduced to a lot of, you know, Mexican music that way and Spanish music that way.
Sure, yeah.
So do you feel like that is really embedded in you musically?
It has to be. Most of us have the residue of thousands of songs in our ears that I think if you wind up songwriting, I think you're mostly smoking the residue of all that material that you've absorbed over time.
Did the Mexican radio stations sound thrilling in a way because they were coming from another country in another language? I mean, one of the great things about, like, when radio was the only way of hearing a lot of music, you would try to get pull in stations from far away, and the further you could go, the more kind of special and mysterious it all started to sound to you. Did you have that reaction to the Mexican stations?
Well, my dad did not recommend us listening to anything but that. For some reason, he thought that was, everything else was really unimportant. We had to speak Spanish at the dinner table and all that. So
you had to speak Spanish at the dinner table?
Oh, yeah.
But he wasn't Spanish, right?
No, my dad was from Texas. But he grew up around the orange groves in Laverne, Pomona. And, you know, ate with the workers in the field and learned their songs. And then when he was college age, it just seemed the most appropriate thing for him to be doing would be something that incorporated his love of the language and the culture. So he became a Spanish teacher. And When I went to restaurants with my dad as a kid, when the mariachis would come to the table, he knew all the songs, and they were more interested in him. And he would suggest songs and was paying for them to play more and more songs. And by the end of the meal, he would usually get up and leave with them and go to the next gig with them. And we would find our way back to the hotel on our own.
That's funny.
Can you imagine that?
So one more question before we hear Back in the Crowd, and you'll probably think I'm crazy, but were you thinking about Elvis a little bit when you were singing this?
Oh, I think about Elvis all the time. But I think I probably was thinking about Elvis. You know, Elvis and Jim Reeves, too.
Mm-hmm.
My wife, you know, I'm the other half of what I consider to be a really great songwriting team, which means that we argue a lot, you know, about what a song can be, should be, what it'll be if you do this to it, you know. So we discuss all these facets, and she's a great, I don't know, Amelia Earhart and Jane Goodall and Ariel Durant and Joan Jett all rolled into one. She's really great to work with. And I feel sometimes like I have a map in my pocket that folds up, and I pull it out, and it's bigger than the table. And there's 1,000 places to go.
Well, let's hear it. This is Back in the Crowd by my guest, Tom Waits, from Tom Waits' new album, Bad as Me.
You don't want these arms to hold you. If you don't want these lips to kiss you. If you found someone new, put me back in the crowd. Put the sun behind the clouds. Put me back in the crowd. There's a battle going on between the blue and the gray. And if you don't want my love, don't make me stay.
That That's Back in the Crowd from Tom Waits' latest album, Bad as Me. We'll hear more from Waits after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Tom Waits. His latest album is called Bad as Me. Now, the last time you were on Fresh Air, which was back in 2002, you said that one of the reasons you wanted a kind of raspy voice when you sang is that when you were a young man, you couldn't wait to be an old man.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned like Louis Armstrong and how when you were, I guess, a teenager, you walked with a cane for a while to affect a certain look. And I'm wondering, that desire to, like, be an old man, how's that feeling now? Now that, like, you're in your early 60s.
Now that I'm an old man.
Well, you're not an old man, but you're closer than you were when you were in your teens, that's for sure.
Well, I don't know. I guess I've always lived upside down. I want things I can't have. My wife actually thinks that I have a syndrome. It's called reality distortion field. You know, it's kind of like drugs, only you can't come back from it, you know. Reality distortion is almost a permanent condition. So I guess to a certain degree, I did that with myself. When I was a kid, I did want to be an old-timer. I thought they were the ones with the big stories and the cool clothes. You know, and the great hats, and, I wanted to go there.
You have a couple of songs about death on the new album.
Oh, about death. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, well, like, one is explicitly about death, and one of them is kind of a metaphor for death called Last Leaf.
Yeah.
And,
Well, I don't know. You could say it's a metaphor for death, or you could say it's really a song about the last leaf on a tree, you know, because I did see a tree out in my yard that had one leaf left on it.
Oh, really?
And I looked at that leaf and I said, "Hang on, buddy. If you hang on, you can make it to the next season. If you can make it to the next one, you might be here next year, greeting all the new ones. Hang on." But I remember saying that to myself, like I was talking to a cat, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, my wife said, get Keith to sing on that.
Yeah, this is Keith Richards, who's featured on guitar on several tracks and on vocals, vocal backup on this.
It was great working with him. Like they say, with recording, it's either really easy or it's impossible. And with him, it's easy.
So let's hear Last Leaf. This is from Tom Waits' new album, Bad as Me. And it features Keith Richards on guitar and backup vocals.
When the autumn wind blows, they're already gone. Flutter to the ground because they can't hang on. And there's nothing in the world that I ain't seen. I greet all the new ones that are coming in. I'm the last leaf on the tree. And the autumn took the rest, but they won't take me. I'm the last leaf on the tree. They say I've got staying power here on the tree, but I've been here sighs and out, I outlived even he. I'm the last leaf on the tree. The autumn took the rest, but they won't take me.
That's Tom Waits with Keith Richards singing backup from Tom Waits' new album, Bad as Me. How do you and Keith Richards even know each other?
back in 84, 85, I don't know, New York. We were doing Rain Dogs. And my wife said, get Keith to play on this. I said, oh, God, no, I can't. I'm not worthy. She said, no, we get him. And it, one thing led to the other. And so, you know, he was called, and then I was mortified and embarrassed, and they sent him the record, and he liked it, and he came down with a semi-truck full of instruments and a musical butler, and, you know, it was really hilarious. And so I've stayed in touch and know him since then. We wrote songs together for a while, and that was fun. I had never really written with anybody except my wife, so it was unique and a little scary at first because he doesn't really remember anything or write anything down. So you play for an hour, and then he would yell across the room, "Scribe!" And I looked around, "Scribe? Who's the scribe?" And then he'd say it again, and now pointing at me, "Scribe!" And I was supposed to have written down everything we said and dreamt of and played. And I realized that we needed an adult in the room. And I've never been the one that one would consider the adult. So it was an interesting dynamic. I learned to be a scribe.
We'll continue our interview with Tom Waits in the second half of the show. His latest album is called Bad as Me. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Cabot Creamery Cooperative, 5 generations of New England and New York farm families working together to produce naturally aged traditional Vermont cheddar cheese. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And from Ally Bank, offering Pop Money, a way to pay other people online by sending an email or a text. Learn more at allybank.com. This is NPR.
Coming up, more with Tom Waits. And Jimmy Fallon of Late Night shows off some of his uncanny impressions and talks about doing them.
I plant a seed deep in the ground. Why? I put a stone on the craving town.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our interview with Tom Waits, one of rock's great songwriters, performers, and eccentrics. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year, introduced by Neil Young. His latest album is called Bad as Me. So there's another great ballad on your album called New Year's Eve. The song uses a line that you actually said in our previous interview. What you said in the previous interview was that sometimes you used to listen to 2 radios at the same time because you like hearing things incorrectly, and you got a lot of ideas by mishearing something. And in the song you use the line, "All the noise was disturbing, and I couldn't find Irving. It was like two stations at the same time.
Yeah.
And I guess, is that an image you've been carrying around for many years and it finally made its way into a song?
That happens. And so, yeah, I'm sure I've been carrying it around. The other line in there that I wanted to get into a song was, you know, you ever said to somebody, just keep talking, but don't use any names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like two spies talking, you know. Mm-hmm. Like you're talking about drugs, or you're talking about a woman, or, you know. And I that's how the song kind of began, with just that line. And then we expanded it to a litany of trouble on New Year's, and then we all end up singing together in the middle of an evening filled with, a burnt sofa and a runaway dog and a broken window, and someone got arrested.
Well, let's hear New Year's Eve.
Okay.
From Tom Waits' new album, Bad as Me.
It felt like 4 in the morning. What sounded like fireworks turned out to be just what it was. The stars looked like diamonds, and then came the sirens, and everyone started to curse. All the noise was disturbing, and I couldn't find on at the same time. And then I hid your car keys, and I made black coffee, and I dumped out the rest of the room. Nick and Socorro broke up.
That's New Year's Eve from Tom Waits' new album, Bad as Me. Back in the days when you were living in a hotel or living on the road,
yeah.
Did you ever imagine that one day you would be married for 30 years and the father of three?
No, I didn't. But I do remember disciplining imaginary children in the back seat of my car.
Why?
Hold your horses, Bill. It's enough out of you. I don't know why. Maybe I was anticipating their arrival, and I was rehearsing. I don't know, but I couldn't have seen that one coming. I don't know how much of our lives we can actually see coming.
Did you have an image in mind about what it would mean to be a father,
yeah,
and husband, and everything that you'd have to give up, and how you'd become like a conventional person or something, and that it turns out you could do it on your own terms and be not be what you thought it might be?
So it's not like the army, right? You get a uniform. Here's your orders. Report here at a certain time. Yeah. No, I realized eventually that it could be, you know, that you can roll your own. And my wife realized that as well, I think. I mean, there's still certain things that being a musician is not helpful in family life. When things like fix the shower, start the truck, get the milk, things that are all part of daily living, that being a musician is not really doesn't give you an advantage. And I think even musical thoughts sometimes are inappropriate, and they're poorly timed. You know, they're like, it's like erotic thoughts in church. You have to, you bat them away. and because it's just the timing is wrong. I learned, I guess, at a certain point that I was going to do it my way. I don't know what any other way to do things is like other than my way, to quote Frank.
Right.
Sinatra.
So I just want to quote something that you told The Guardian British newspaper a few years ago in 2006. And you said that when you stopped drinking, you wondered, am I genuinely eccentric or am I just wearing a funny hat? What am I made of? What's left when you drain the pool? So I think it was like years ago, many years ago, that you gave up drinking. What did you learn about yourself when the alcohol wasn't there anymore?
I didn't know what to do with my hands.
Oh, like when you stopped smoking?
Yeah, well, yeah, I was smoking one hand and drinking the other. What did I learn? Boy, that's a big question, Terry.
If it's too big, don't feel like you need to answer it.
I think it's probably like the what my wife said about the reality distortion field that I live in, which is kind of a place that you don't necessarily come back from. You know, maybe drugs and alcohol are more of a vacation from reality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They say that life itself is really just the dead on vacation, you know?
Oh, God, I hadn't heard that.
Isn't that terrible? I don't know. Am I just wearing a funny hat? Am I just trying to say weird stuff? Or am I really peculiar and genuinely?
Did you want to be peculiar?
Well, I've always wanted to be curious and provocative, I guess, and interesting and interested in this kind of sparkling sapphire we all call home. You know? I've always wanted to be mystified by it all and rather fascinated with the life itself, and I don't know when I think maybe when you drink you're probably robbing yourself of that genuine experience, even though it appears that you're doing is getting more of it. You're getting less of it, and it takes a while when you've had a rock on the hose like that for so long. It takes a while for the hose to be a hose again, you know. And for things to start flowing. Like with songs, if you don't play for a while, if you stop playing for like even like a year, sometimes it all builds up in a really great way. That there's no such thing as not playing. You know, there's just, you know, music has rests in it. So you're on a rest right now. And the music will begin shortly. You know, it's like an orchestra tuning up. I used to try and get myself started. I would take a tape recorder and I would put it in the trash can, and the ones that are on wheels, you know, and I'd turn it on, and then I'd roll around in the yard with it and then play it back and see if I could hear any interesting rhythms, you know, that were just part of nature, you know. Or I tell you, the best snare drum on earth is a trampoline in like November, when all the branches have landed and they're heavy and they're wet. And when you jump on the trampoline, they all lift up and come down at the same time. It's like, wow.
Have you used those sounds on recordings?
I haven't, but I intend to.
So in terms of your life, do you feel like at this point in your life that you are like naturally eccentric and naturally interesting enough that no further artifice is required?
No more artifice. Well, there's always, you know, my wife thinks I'm a hoarder, you know, and I don't know. I collect things. It just occurred to me that I have a lot of National Geographics. And, you know, when they get wet, I mean, like if you have like 300 of them and they get wet, it could kill you. You know, if they're like above in an attic and they fall down. But instead of saying funny things, you say things, the way you say them is funny, instead of them being funny by themselves, you know. Or and the same is true of melody.
Mm-hmm.
I like writing melody without an instrument, just so it's more like the choreography of a bee. You just go, you know, there are no frets on your neck, you know. And my wife likes doing that too. She'll just start singing out of nowhere, you know, without an instrument. It's really It's the best way to do it, I think.
Okay. It was so great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Good talking with you too, Terry.
Tom Waits' latest album is called Bad As Me. We recorded our interview in October when it was released. Coming up, Jimmy Fallon, as we continue our series featuring some of our most entertaining interviews of the year. This is Fresh Air. If you watch Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, you know what an uncanny ability he has to do other people's voices, like Neil Young and Bob Dylan. Lots of people who can't stay up late enough to watch the show see his impressions because they go viral on the internet. Jimmy Fallon became known for his impressions when he was a cast member on Saturday Night Live, but he became even better known on SNL for co-anchoring Weekend Update with Tina Fey. Fallon took over Late Night from Conan O'Brien when O'Brien left to prepare to host The Tonight Show in 2009. Every Friday on Late Night, Fallon does a feature called Thank You Notes, in which he writes and reads messages addressed to the things that have made him grateful during the week. I spoke with him last May after he published his book, collecting those thank you notes. One of the things I love about your show is it gives you an opportunity to do your music impressions. You're amazing when it comes to doing music impressions of people like Neil Young and Bob Dylan. So let's just hear an example of it first. So this is you doing the Willow Smith song,
Willow
Whip
Smith,
My Hair.
Yeah.
And she's the daughter of Will Smith and Jada Pinkett.
Yeah, she's a very good hip-hop song. Goes, I whip my hair back and forth. I whip my hair back and forth. Yeah. It's a big hit song. So this is me doing Neil Young doing Whip My Hair with Bruce Springsteen.
Okay, so here it is. So that's Jimmy Fallon doing Neil Young. We didn't have time here for the Springsteen part. Maybe we'll get to that a little later. But so what's so interesting about how you do this is you're not only doing Neil Young's voice, you're rewriting the song the way Neil Young would sing it because he's such an idiosyncratic singer in terms of the way he re-melodicizes things. So can you talk about like doing Neil Young?
I always kind of had a Neil Young impression, like everyone does, you know. But
I
a great
don't.
Writer.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. You must have sang along with a few songs. I've heard you do Harvest Moon. So I've always just had it as an impressionist. I think every impressionist has a Neil Young. Let's just say that. But you never know what to do with it. You know, once you have it, it's like having a Jack Nicholson impression. Everyone's got one. What do you do with it? So there's a great writer. This is just a tip of the hat to my writing staff. A writer said, why don't you do a version of Neil Young? We'll do a nice version of Willow Smith's Whip My Hair. And I go, oh, that's funny. That'd be cool. I go, also, Bruce Springsteen's coming on. Would you think he would do a duet with me if we wrote a fake duet with me as fake Neil Young and him really as him? He goes, well, let's get to it. So we sat down. We had a guitar. He had a guitar, and we just sat around my office. And I'm trying to think of like how Neil would do it. And it's a lot of G chord into D chords, and maybe throw in like an A minor in there. And it's like whip my hair back and forth, just whip it. You know, and they get the harmonica going, the harmonica thing around the neck. And then I go, and Bruce has got to come in. He's got to go like, you gotta whip your hair, whip my hair back and forth. You gotta whip your hair. You know, he's got to jump in with that energy. And now I go, and so So we recorded it on our phone, you know, with just a scratch recording of me and him, and we're laughing, and we record the thing, and we send it over to Bruce Springsteen's manager. And Bruce Springsteen, his manager gets it, and he goes, Bruce loves it. He thinks it's hilarious. He his kids know Whip My Hair, and so and he's seen you do Neil Young on the show, and he's game. He goes, here's our idea. Do you want Bruce to dress like young Bruce from the 70s? So I right, my mouth is, my jaws, I'm like, of course, yeah. I didn't even think that he would even put on a, I mean, when are you going to get Bruce Springsteen in a wig? I'm telling you right now, it'll never
happen. And a fake mustache and beard.
Yeah, and a fake beard. And, I mean, this is from the Born to Run era, you know, floppy hat. This is cover of Newsweek and Time Magazine Bruce Springsteen, where you go, whoa, this is the future of rock and roll Bruce Springsteen. So the fact that he's game for this, I go, okay, we'll get a beard, and we'll get a floppy hat. I go, no problem. He goes, and Bruce said he's going to bring his sunglasses from the Born to Run tour.
That's so great.
Actual mirrored sunglasses. I go, okay, he's game. So he comes over. He brings his sunglasses out. They tape a beard on him because they don't want to put glue on his face. So he has a beard taped to him. And he goes, you got the floppy hat? And we put the floppy hat on him. He goes, whoa, this looks exactly like it. This is great. I go. Well, also, we have a wig. Do you want to try the wig on? He goes, what? No. What are you trying to do to me? No, I don't want to wear a wig. I go, okay, no problem. No big deal. So everyone leaves the room. It's just me and Bruce. We're kind of laughing. And I the door closed. And I go, hey, it's just us. You want to just try the wig on? He's like, what? I go, just try the wig. I mean, it's got the curls on it. I think it'll be the final touch. And he goes, all right, hurry up, put the wig on. So I put a wig on Bruce Springsteen, and I'm putting this wig on him, and he's laughing. And then we put the floppy hat and the beard and the glasses, and he looks at the mirror, and he goes, whoa! And that was it.
And then to top it all off, Springsteen throws in a little Thunder Road thing. Toward the end. So why don't we hear the part where Bruce Springsteen comes in and joins you as Neil Young?
Cool.
So that's such a great moment. Were there Neil Young records you just steeped yourself in before doing that? Do you listen to a lot of the performer you're going to do before you do them?
Yeah, I think I have one of those things. When I grew up, I had, you know, I've always done impressions. So I think if I listen to a record long enough, so I'll listen to Harvest, and I'll listen to the whole album, and then I could do Neil Young. You know, I can listen to, you know, Blonde on Blonde, you know, and I'll do Bob Dylan. You know, I could watch an episode of Jerry Seinfeld, and by the end, I'm just walking around my house. You know, I'm talking like Jerry Seinfeld. What is that? What are you doing? Who is there? What's going on? You know, I just had that thing when I grew up. I just start talking like people. I always had that. I would go visit a friend of mine's house, and I come back. My mom was like, "You're talking like Joey Gonzalez," because I would sound like my best friend. I would just imitate him, you know.
Now, I read that the first imitation you did was James Cagney, and I thought that's crazy, because when I was growing up, and I'm older than you are, all the Impressionists did Cagney, you dirty rat. And
yes.
That was like during the Ed Sullivan era. You didn't grow up
Frank
during
Gorshin, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't grow up during that era. You grew up during the Saturday Night Live era when people were no longer doing James Cagney. So how did you end up doing Cagney impressions?
It's more of a technicality. I did it, I was 2 years old when I did that impression. So I was a baby, and my mom would say, Jimmy, do James Cagney. And I would go, you dirty rat. So I already had an act.
How did you
I already
hear
had an
it?
Act at 2 years old.
How did
and then
you
I did,
know
I think
about
I did,
Jimmy Cagney then?
I grew up in an Irish Catholic family, and I think they force you to watch every James Cagney movie. I mean, come on, kids,
Yankee,
come on in.
Yankee Doodle Dandy too?
Oh, of course, Song and Dance. That's the advanced years of Cagney. Yeah, but you start off with the gangster movies. I mean, every kid loves a good gangster movie.
Oh, who doesn't?
But I mean, I watched, yeah, Angels with Dirty Faces, White Heat.
Do you ever get into trouble with celebrities who you're imitating? Do they ever, like, not like it and not take it as a compliment?
You think they would? I just saw recently. I did a Donald Trump impression, and I saw Donald Trump, and it was my impression was basically because I was thinking the president got and announced that Osama bin Laden had been killed. He announced it right in the he interrupted the last 15 minutes of the Celebrity Apprentice, and I go, man, this is perfect, right? I mean, that's a double win for Obama. So I said, we got to do Trump. I got to do some press conference where he's like, this is amazing, a beautiful, beautiful evening. The president, you know, it's like, did you really have to interrupt the last 15 minutes of one of the greatest boardrooms in the history of Celebrity Apprentice? Beautiful people there, fantastic job. And I say, like, I mean, why couldn't you have waited till the show that's on after me, which is, let's see what it is. Let's see what's on after me. Oh, yeah, the news. Why couldn't you have interrupted the news with the news? So I did that. So I saw Donald Trump at some event, and I go, hey, Mr. Trump, I do an impression of you tonight on the show. And he goes, oh, you do great impressions. I go, yeah, but I'm doing you tonight on the show. I just want to let you know. And he turns around to his whole table and he goes, Jimmy Fallon's doing an impression of me tonight. I go, will you stop it? I'm trying to tell you something, man to man, so that you don't get caught off guard. I don't want you to be upset. I don't want to announce it to everybody. But I think he knows that, like, when I do an impression of people, I never kick anybody when they're down. I either kick them when they're up and they don't mind, or I don't hit them that hard. My jokes aren't that mean-spirited.
My guest is Jimmy Fallon. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jimmy Fallon, the host of NBC's Late Night. He got his start on Saturday Night Live, where he eventually anchored Weekend Update with Tina Fey. You were described in an article in Rolling Stone as the least tortured comedian imaginable. Would you agree with that description of yourself?
I think if I ever went to therapy, you'd find something. But yeah, I've had a pretty, you know, I love my parents. I love my childhood. I love my sister. You know, I mean, I get picked on like any kid would get picked on in school, but not that much. I mean, I got in some fights, but not that many fights. I think I had a pretty normal childhood. I mean, my life isn't Angela's Ashes. You know, I mean, that guy, I mean, come on. I mean, they're eating a hard-boiled egg, you know. I had it easier than that. I didn't have it that bad.
So you went to Catholic school when you were young.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have
I wanted to be a priest.
Did you really?
Yeah, I loved it. I loved the church. I loved the idea of it. I loved the smell of the incense. I loved the feeling you get when you left church. I loved, like, how this priest can make people feel this good. I just thought it was, I loved the whole idea of it. My grandfather was very religious, so I used to go to Mass with him at, like, 6:45 in the morning, serve Mass. And then you made money, too, if you did weddings and funerals. They give you, get, like, $5. And so I go, okay, I can make money, too. I go, this could be a good deal for me. I thought I had the calling.
Do you think part of that calling was really show business? Because the priest is the performer at church.
Yeah. I recently thought about this. Again, I've never been to therapy, but I guess that would be, it's being on stage. It's my first experience on stage is as an altar boy. You're on stage next to the priest. I'm a co-star. I'm on.
Also starring Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, I have no lines, but I ring bells. I ring bells and I swing the incense around. But it was you are performing. You enter through a curtain. You exit through the. I mean, you're backstage. I mean, have you ever seen backstage behind an altar? It's kind of fascinating.
Right.
So I think it was my first taste of show business. I think or acting or something.
And there are comparisons, I think, between a theater and a church. They're just kind of places that are separated from outside reality.
Yeah, and I remember I had a hard time keeping a straight face at church as well.
Did you?
Did you do
imitations of the priest?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I used to do Father McFadden all the time. He's the fastest talking priest ever. He'd be like, and then you leave and you go, what was that? That guy's the best. I mean, that was church? Sign me up. I'll do church. I'll do it 10 times a day if that's church. So he was great.
Do you still go to church?
I don't go. I tried to go back when I was out in LA and I was like kind of struggling for a bit. I went to church for a while, but it's gotten gigantic now for me. There's a band there now, and you have to hold hands with people through the whole mass now, and I don't like doing that. You know, I mean, it used to be shaking hands peace was the only time you touched each other. Mm-hmm. Now I'm lifting people like Simba. I'm holding them. Hanya, hanya. I'm doing too much. I don't want this frisbees being thrown, this beach balls going around, people waving lighters. And I go, this is too much for me. I want the old way. I want to hang out with the nuns. You know, that was my favorite type of mass, in the grotto. And just like straight up, that just mass.
Well, Jimmy Fallon, I think you're really incredible. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, you're the best. This is so much fun. I feel like I actually have inhaled fresh air.
Great. Jimmy Fallon recorded last May after the publication of his book collecting the thank you notes he reads Friday nights on NBC's Late Night. Our series featuring some of our most entertaining interviews of the year continues tomorrow. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Joyce Foundation, working to improve the quality of life in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. From the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting research on how social factors like housing and jobs affect health. Learn more at rwjf.org. And from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is NPR.
Yo, 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 1-4-8.
That's Aaron Paul as Jesse Pinkman on AMC's Breaking Bad. On the next Fresh Air, we'll hear from him as we continue our series featuring some of our most entertaining interviews of the year. And we'll hear from Margo Martindale, who won an Emmy this year for her performance on Justified. Join us.